Hey, St. John. Welcome to the Post Sermon Podcast. I am Deaconess Dahlia, and with me today is Pastor Adam.
Hi, Deaconess.
So we are actually going to be talking about Good Friday today.
Yeah. I know we're last time was Maundy Thursday when we recorded, and now it's
it was the second Sunday after Easter.
Yeah.
So that shows where we're at.
So hopefully things will be back up to speed after we catch up on all the backlog of sermons from Holy Week.
Right, exactly. So let's jump right into it. Tell me about the text that you preached on for Good Friday.
Yeah, so looking at Matthew chapter 27, I zoomed in more explicitly on the part where Jesus is before Pontius Pilate and all the back and forth between Pilate and the leaders and Pilate and the crowd. And in Matthew's gospel, you get a note here from Pilate's wife. It doesn't even say a note, just says he got word from his wife saying to have nothing to do with that righteous man because I have suffered much because of him today in a dream. And it's, again, unique to Matthew's gospel. And I thought, well, why not lean into that for a Good Friday sermon and what could be said about that curious detail from Matthew?
And so a big theme of the sermon was dreams. And you started off by talking about God intervening through dreams, even before he had intervened in that dream of Pilate's wife. You want to go into that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, Matthew is just a wonderful gospel. It's my favorite.
Really? Yeah, I didn't know you liked Matthew.
Yes. Some would say it's the best gospel. And a huge theme in the book of Matthew is that God's ways are not our ways. And God is going to go about his rule and reign in unexpected ways. And even if people are trying to get in the way, God will, if you will, correct course. And he will intervene. And very much so in the beginning of Matthew, you have a number of dreams. Right? Joseph wants to divorce Mary quietly. That was until God intervened in a dream. You have Herod tricking the Magi to say, hey, tell me about Jesus. We know where he is and I will go worship him. Obviously, Herod is not doing this in a good way. That was until God intervened in a dream. And then about Joseph fleeing Egypt. Again, God in a dream. And then the return from Egypt. God is intervening in a dream again and again and again. And then it just, the dream stuff goes away until here. You get another dream, which invites all sorts of interesting questions of, is this another way that God is intervening? Is this something different? You know, what do we say about this instance here with Pilate's wife?
And I want to talk a little bit more about that dream with Pilate's wife. What is the significance that this happened to her?
The honest answer is, I don't know. All we have is what the text says here, right? He says, besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him, have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream.
But she calls him righteous.
Which is interesting detail.
Yeah. Because why would she, out of all people, call him righteous?
And if I remember, this is the first time in Matthew that Jesus is ascribed with the adjective righteous, which is part of the reason.
Really?
It's part of the reason I did the adjective stuff in the sermon was Jesus is, you know, the righteous man and then the unrighteous man or the notorious prisoner Barabbas goes free. That's why I had that in the sermon. Yeah, it's out of the blue, kind of expected. How did Pilate's wife find out about Jesus in this way? And this ties in with other ideas of Matthew, how like in chapter 11, Jesus speaks of God the Father revealing these things, not to the wise and understanding, but to little children. Or Matthew 16, when you get Peter's great confession, Jesus again says that this was not revealed to you by men, but by my Father who is in heaven. And as we see throughout Matthew, God will intervene, and God will reveal himself as he chooses to and in surprising ways. Maybe this is it, but the trouble is we don't officially know.
Right. I know it's hard not to read into it because you could almost see it as like a warning from God to, I mean, Pilate, right, that this is going to have consequences, what you're doing. But I don't know.
Right. So is it a warning from God? Is it something else? And that was kind of the fun part of writing the sermon.
You're right. I guess it doesn't say that it was God who gave her that dream.
Right, right. And again, we're just staying with Matthew. We're not going to deal with like Joseph or other dreams or our dreams. We're just not going to go that direction of trying to interpret them. I'm just trying to stay within Matthew. And we want to kind of let the other shoe drop and say, well, here, God's clearly intervening again. it doesn't pan out as it did with God intervening in the other dreams. So you can't necessarily say that. And you can't even say for sure that it's God intervening because it doesn't say. And so that's kind of the, I thought was kind of a neat way to speak of Jesus's crucifixion. That all the way up to this point, God has been preserving his son, protecting him, intervening until the right time. And here's the time when Jesus must be the ransom payment for many. Here's where Jesus must die for the sins of the world. And the Father is not going to protect his son. We think of the song, How Deep the Father's Love for Us. You get the line, the Father turns his face away. You know, the culmination of Jesus saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? And so that's, I thought, would be at least a nice turn in the sermon, is to focus on Jesus is not saved. He is not spared. He is sent off to die, and the unrighteous, notorious prisoner is freed. And to tie that in with the dream ideas of Matthew, but not to go further than what Matthew was saying, right? That was the trick.
Well, let's then connect this to us and our dreams and nightmares and night terrors. How did you intend to benefit us and our faith in life with knowing that we too have dreams and bad dreams, and yet they are different than maybe what Pilate's wife or the other examples in Matthew were like?
Yeah. And again, I don't want to go into like dream interpretation or some of these things. I'm glad we're not doing a Joseph sermon right now, but Joseph from Genesis, not Joseph, Matthew 1. And let's see. I hope it didn't come across as cheesy to say like, hey, Jesus is going to save us from bad dreams. And if that was the Good Friday message, that's not good. But what I wanted to do is, well, how do we get to our real problem, which is going to be sin, death, and the devil?
And this affects our dreams too.
And that's the reality. You know, sin has entered into the creation and has corrupted every aspect and realm and relationship and detail of this creation, even down to our dreams. And so I thought that might be a way to kind of get into the idea of sin, is even just why do we have bad dreams or nightmares or night terrors? These are a sort of product, side effect, a result of being in a sinful creation, and it's our fault. We have corrupted this thing, which means even our dreams are our fault. The reason we are scared and are afraid. And so that allowed me to get to the problem of sin and death. And if Jesus has come to be the one to remove sin, it also means he's going to remove the effects of our sin, which is in addition to undoing death, which is in addition to stopping disease and other sorts of suffering. It even includes having bad dreams. And I just really enjoyed the idea of thinking ahead to the new creation, and, you know, there will be the day of resurrection. But it also means as we go about our lives in the new creation, we're going to be able to sleep and not have bad dreams anymore. And so as much as Jesus is going to hang there in the darkness in the middle of the day, and it's almost as if it's night, you know, when the night comes for us in the new creation, it's actually going to be a night of sleeping in heavenly peace. In the past here, we'll have Good Friday services where we will pray Luther's evening prayer. And this idea of going to sleep at once in a good cheer, that God gives his holy angel to protect us during the night. So these are just some of the ideas that are floating around, and just how do we get to our real problem of sin and death. I thought the idea of dreams as an effect or a result of our sin allows me to get to that and speak of the gospel in an interesting way.
I really like what you said at the end of the sermon, how you mentioned, well, and you mentioned this right now too, about this, there will be a night when we'll be able to fall asleep in heavenly peace. And you had said a heavenly peace won for you during the nightmare of Good Friday. So I don't know, I just like that contrast right there.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And one of the concerns I had was this idea of a dream and nightmare, and it's not real. But what happened to Jesus is very, very real.
Sure.
It's a historical fact in reality, and it is incarnate as his flesh and blood still are. And that means he's going to heal and restore everything of this created world, even the ideas, the thoughts, the dreams that we have. And so, I don't know, I've never heard a sermon, I don't think, involving Pilate's wife here in Matthew. And since we were in Matthew, it's a unique detail.
It's a perfect opportunity.
Yeah. And also just a way to, you know, Good Friday, you know how we kind of break up the readings. It was, we weren't sure for a while where the sermon was going to be in the service, just where to place it. And just, you know, Good Friday is its own service, you know, darkness and candles. And
you even joked about not having a sermon.
I did.
I did not like that idea. Yeah. I was like, it's Good Friday. We have to have a sermon.
Right, right. No, I agree. It was more just where do you put the sermon in, because, you know, the service is its own sort of thing. And so I thought it was nice to have the sermon earlier in the service and to kind of frame the rest of going through the narrative of Christ's death. And he's going through all this for us. He's the righteous man taking the place of the unrighteous. Here he is paying for the sins of the world. Here he is putting all things right in the middle of the darkness, in the middle of the night, the nightmare of it all, that we may sleep in heavenly peace. I thought it was a nice way to kind of set up the rest of the service by having that so early in our Good Friday Tenebrae service.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was nice. I like that the Good Friday service, it was, I think, similar to past years. Like, you always know what to expect, but at the same time, there were some changes in it this year. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you wanted to talk about that in this episode at all.
Yeah, I think I'll just say in general, when it comes to worship service planning, there's a lot of thought that goes into the services, and it is an ongoing conversation and difficulty of figuring out, so what's kind of a non-negotiable with the congregation? Like, we got to have these things for these services, you know, like a Christmas Eve or a Good Friday, or people have certain pictures and ideas in their mind. Do we have to sing this, or we don't sing that? Or
we had a long conversation about how many candles there should be out, like where they should be placed.
Do we even need candles, right?
We know we need candles, but that's a non-negotiable.
Okay, so we got non-negotiable for deaconess here. Yeah, and it's tough to figure out how to plan services because there are these different expectations. But even then, when it comes to service planning, the whole aim is pointing everyone to Jesus. And that's kind of the razor we keep using is, okay, so how does this point people to Jesus this go around? And so it's not just to do something different, to do something differently. It's not just to do something the way we've always done it, because that's the way we've always done it, but it's to keep asking, so how does this point us to Jesus? And yeah, worship service planning is interesting. And we certainly appreciate feedback all over the place in the congregation, because we're going to have Good Friday again next year, unless Christ returns. So we'll have to think through what we're going to do then.
This wraps up the episode for today. Thank you for listening to our discussion. In case you missed the sermon or you'd like to listen to it again, the link to the sermon's in the show notes. You can also find the sermon on our church website, stjohndublin.org. If you, the listener, would like to submit a question about a sermon, please email us at podcast@stjohndublin.org. Thank you, Pastor, for joining me and for feeding us the word this week.
Or a couple of weeks ago. Thanks, Deaconess.
Take care, you guys. Bye.